Hi there, welcome to Talk Canicross. I'm Janetta George.
And I'm Gail Walker. We're here today to talk all things Canicross, the fun way to get fit with your dog.
So each month we'll be joined by a special guest or two. We'll hear from professionals, regular Canicrossers, and also dog and human experts in their field. It will be real people and real stories.
So we hope you'll join us, whether it's for training tips, dog talk, or just for fun and encouragement. This is Talk Canicross, brought to you by DogFit. And don't forget to hit subscribe and keep in touch with all things Canicross. Hi, so one of the most common questions we get asked by our customers is, how old should my dog be before they can Canicross? We always advocate waiting until your dog is fully grown before they do anything too rigorous, as their growth plates are still forming. But we thought we'd get an expert in to explain in a little bit more detail why this is so important. Grace Bird, who is our guest today, is a radiographer and dog fit trainer. So she not only has the knowledge, but she can relate it to this sport we all love so much. Grace also has experience working with reactive and anxious dogs. So we thought we'd take the opportunity to ask her why she feels Canicross is such a great outlet for them. So first of all, welcome, Grace. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really lovely to have you on the show. And of course, you've got a really rewarding job and obviously working with animals all the time, as well as being a dog fit trainer, of course. But for our listeners, could you just tell us a little about your journey, your background, how you got to be where you are today?
Yeah, of course. So so currently I'm a radiographer at the Small Animal Hospital, like Gail said, but before that I was a radiographer in the NHS. So a radiographer, in case you don't know, is somebody who takes x-rays or CTs or MRIs or ultrasounds, anything that's involved in medical imaging or diagnostic imaging, we call it. So that's what I am. That's what I trained to be. So I really loved working with children in the NHS, but an opportunity came up for me to move to animal world. So I grabbed it with both hands because I love animals, but I really, really love dogs. So the idea of seeing all my patients as dogs each day would be fantastic. So I got to merge two loves of mine together, which was really, really good. That's kind of how I got into the job that I'm at. Like you said, my other job and passion is kind of dog fit training. So I've only really just started doing it, which is really exciting. So I'm kind of at that beginning bit of my journey there. But it's really fun and I'm loving it already. I've kind of got into running at university and since then haven't looked back at all. Did my first race kind of first year, just signed up for it, didn't really know what I was doing, and then got the bug and didn't stop. Always wanted a dog since I was tiny. So as soon as I got my own house, got a dog, and then couldn't wait for the two just to merge together, and then it did. So
excellent. So you go from being a human radiographer to being a pet one. I guess it's just a different subject.
Yeah, slightly different body parts. Yeah, if it's much cuter patients, if I can say that as well.
And are you, when you're doing the x-rays, are the animals always put to sleep for that, or some of them conscious?
Some of them are conscious. They're the really fun ones. So some of the studies we do are something called swallow studies. So it's assessing how dogs, mostly dogs, this is, swallow, especially if they've got any like regurgitation, we look at that. And they have to be awake for that. So we all get covered in this special dyed dog food, which just goes everywhere as we try to get the dogs to eat it and take a picture while they're doing it. So that's a really fun one. But sometimes they're encouraged to go to sleep under a bit of sedation because it's just a bit fairer for them, really. My favourite one is when the cats aren't sedated. We can play them little videos of birds and they just sit there absolutely fixated watching the birds, so they're still for their scan, which I love that.
Dogs aren't quite so easy to manipulate then.
They just want to chase.
They're watching the cat, watching the bird. Yeah. But it must be very, very rewarding, Grace, doing that job, I imagine.
It is, and it's actually rewarding it's rewarding in the vets than it's rewarding in the NHS. I think it's such a great role because we get to see so many patients, whether they're animals or humans, in pretty much every pathway in hospital. It's not just one area of illness or of the hospital that we see. But we also get to see the resolved part as well. So if you take an instance of a broken bone, a fracture, we see the very first bit, but we also get to see the recheck when it's been plated and then when they take the cast off and you see it healed. So that's just a really nice, simple kind of example of how we get to see the healing and then they get discharged and they go on their way. And that happens in animals and humans, and it's really lovely actually, yeah.
So on a daily basis, do you just get a progression of animals that come through, but you don't know quite what's coming next?
Yeah, no day is the same.
I bet it isn't. Oh, that's really rewarding.
So you mentioned obviously being a dog fit trainer, and that's quite critical to what you do. And it's one of your, you know, bringing a couple of your passions together, dogs and fitness. So how did you first discover Canicross, and, you know, what made you decide to come on board as a certified dog fit trainer?
Yeah, so like I said, kind of always been runners. Me and my husband have both been runners really since we've met each other, and both always wanted a dog. And when we got my dog Stanley, he's a Border Collie, he's very well suited to this kind of thing, and we just could not wait until he was old enough to start running with him. He was such an active puppy anyway, and we just couldn't wait to take him out running with us. He wanted to come anyway. We had to say no until he was one, and he just always wanted to come. In it, like when I was thinking about this, I actually remembered when I was little really wanting to do exercise with dogs since I saw Pongo in 101 Dalmatians on the bike at the beginning. And that's going into bike yaw, which is slightly different, but always kind of wanted to combine the two. I just thought it looked really fun, but I didn't really know there was a proper way to do it with all the kit and that it was an actual sport. I just thought people just took their dogs along for a bit of fun. So that's what we did. Once we knew that we'd have to wait till he was one just because he was growing, but we just took him along with a lead. And it was only when we were on a walk quite a little way away from our home, but in a lovely place called Cannock Chase, we saw a group of people running with their dogs in special kit, and it's a dog fit on the back of their t-shirts, and I kind of just hunted them down and said, I want to do that. They invited me along to taste a session, and just didn't look back from that. And the reason I wanted to be a trainer, I think I mentioned that Cannock Chase was, it was a good hour away from where we lived at the time, and there was nowhere closer. So I just thought, a shame that you'd have to travel that far if you wanted to do it, and you wouldn't necessarily stumble across them like I had. So I wanted to set one up.
Brilliant. So there's local people now that can get the opportunity of training with you. So I think you're also doing park runs as well. Is that one of the things that you were doing with Stanley? And you've got Tessa now as well.
That's right. Yeah. So we've got Stanley and Tessa. Stanley is a Border Collie. Like I said, he's 3. And Tessa is a rescue dog. She's 6 years old, but we've only had her for 7 months. So she's really special. But yeah, park run was definitely Stanley's first event, he loves it. He absolutely adores parkrun, and that's such a great, it's a really great way in as well, because you get to meet other people running with dogs, and some of them will have heard of Canicross. So that was another great way to kind of link the two,
to meet people. And so obviously you said that Tessa's 6 years old, but just tell us a little bit how you're building up the training with her, because she's obviously was new to you, wasn't she, as a rescue?
Tessa's new to us as a rescue. She's actually from Romania, so she came across and we started looking after her just before she turned 6. She's a different breed to Stanley. She's a bit of a mix, but she's a shepherd. She's a bit bigger, not quite as agile, but she was also starved before she moved to the UK and got kind of rescued. So we really had to kind of build her up slowly. She didn't have the stamina and muscle that came so quickly with Stanley from him growing as a puppy with the right food and the right environment. So, which became really evident. We took her for a walk and we just went up quite a large hill, but we didn't think much of it. and she had a nap at the top.
Yeah.
She was just so tired. She'd never done that kind of level of exercise. So it was a really big highlight that you couldn't just go straight in with her, even though she was six. So we've built her up slowly. We kind of did a bit of a couch to 5K with her. And I think that's what's so great, even though me and Pete both didn't need to do couch to 5K because we've done it before. Actually taking the time to do it with Tessa really helped her to progress to some longer distances, and she's built up that muscle and she absolutely loves running now. She's enjoying it.
Yeah, lovely.
So it's one common question that we do get asked is about how old your dog should be to start doing Canicross. And obviously you've got lots of experience there in your job and also running with your dogs. And you mentioned about Tessa as well and how you've built up her training. So you know, just in your capacity as within your job and the animal hospital, you know, what reasons would you say, you know, people should wait till their dog is fully grown? We always advocate waiting until they're fully grown because their growth plates are still forming, but it's always good to hear from an actual professional, you know, about the reasons, and maybe go into a little bit more detail about that. Is that something you can share with us today?
Yeah, you mentioned the growth plates, and that's a really good place to start. So for anyone who doesn't really know what a growth plate is, the proper name as such is something called an epiphyseal plate. And that is essentially what Gail said. It's a plate that is used for growing your bone. We have them. Dogs have them. Cats have them. We all have them in almost all of our bones to grow. And it's a small bit of bone which is not ossified, so it's not become hard bone yet. It stays as cartilage until it's ready to be the size that it is. So that's where all the growing takes place in the bone. And they're normally kind of located at the ends of long bones. And you can see them on x-rays as a small black line, a little bit similar to how you would imagine a break or a fracture would look on an x-ray, if you've ever seen that on one of your own.
So the joints wouldn't join up, is that what you'd see, a gap between?
So you'll see the gap from a joint. So joints don't join up because you've got that joint capsule to allow the movement anyway. So you'll see that, and then just below it you'll see a little horizontal black line across the kind of head of the bone, and that's your growth plate. And that is, it's essentially, it's cartilage, so that's why it shows up as black on an x-ray. Bone shows up as white. Anything that isn't bone is a slightly darker shade of grey, so that's why it shows up as black, and just because it's not hard bone. So if you imagine you've got this area that is not hard bone, and it's pivotal to the growth of your bone, if something happens to that growth plate, it's going to really change the way that bone forms. So for example, if you fracture that bone while you're out running and the fracture goes through that growth plate, it will heal in a slightly different way that will alter the way that bone grows, different to the other ones. So you might end up with one of the legs being slightly shorter or going off at an angle, all due to a break through a growth plate. Now, I'm not saying that running itself will automatically break all of the growth plates in your dog's bones. Everyone knows that puppies run around like mad lunatics all the time, and quite often they're absolutely fine. So most of the research comes from actually that on lead exercise and walks can increase your chance of damaging them. None of what I'm saying is an absolute definite. You will never, I cannot say categorically you will injure your dog if you run with them before they are 1 year old, but you are an increased chance of doing it because they're more likely to have a traumatic injury if you're running, just like you. If you're running rather than walking, you're more likely to fall over. You'll see puppies have much less sense of direction and understanding of their own bodies the younger they are, especially. They're also more likely to fall over as well. Now, if you've got them in a harness and you're deciding which way to go, there's also the abrupt movement as well you've got there, and they haven't quite got their same sense of being able to support themselves and balance if they slightly go off if you've got them in a harness. So on lead training, as much as it's essential when you're walking and training a puppy, has an increased risk of injury to your dog. And that's why you'll often find if they're running around the garden, they don't tend to injure themselves as much, because they can, they have their own kind of way of moving once they fall. And you'll find that if you fall over a curb, if someone was holding on to you, you're much more likely to fall awkwardly because you haven't got the normal movement in your body. It's restricted slightly. So that was kind of what growth plates are, kind of why they're important and why running might injure them. The other thing is that you've got something called ossification centers, and that just means that instead of it being a plate, it's the actual whole bone that hasn't formed yet. So some of you might know this, not all of your bones are formed in your body when you're born. And that's the same with humans, it's the same with dogs, all sorts of animals. And a really obvious one to kind of tell you about is your kneecap. So it's something called your patella. In humans, it doesn't actually appear until you're 2 years old. So babies do not have kneecaps.
Wow, didn't know that.
yeah, they are cartilage and they only harden into bone when you're about 2 years old. And there's all sorts of these different bones all over your body. And the last one to fully form as an adult human is when you're 25. So you're technically not mature as a skeleton until you're 25, which is quite bizarre.
Wow.
And there are all sorts of
different bones.
I was going to say it's downhill after 25, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going the way.
Does that, it puts it up a little bit though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the same in dogs, it's just at a much quicker, it's a much quicker pace. So while we wait until we're two for our kneecaps, our puppies get them at 9 weeks.
Yeah.
But they all form and close at different times. Mm-hmm. And there's things there in your wrist, so in dogs' wrists as well. Their wrists are called carpuses, but it's the same principle. They've got all these different bones that will suddenly form at different times in their life. And just really, if you wait until they're all there, you're much better chance of it being the fully working skeleton and body that it's meant to be. And for a dog, most of the bones and almost all of your growth plates that are involved in running will be ossified, so turned into bone, at 12 to 15 months. That age type range does vary between breeds and it varies between individual dogs. But the only way of really telling is if your dog has an x-ray. I wouldn't advocate just taking your dog for an x-ray. As we've said, quite often they have to have a sedation. It's quite an expensive vet trip just to find out if your dog happens to be the one that the growth plates fuse at 11 months. So as a really good kind of average time, it's 12 to 15 months across most breeds. So that's kind of why I'd agree with you that 1 year is a relatively safe time.
Is it, and obviously for larger dogs, it takes a bit longer. That's understanding that the smaller dogs, does everything, the skeleton form earlier than larger dogs?
Or? Not that much earlier. Okay. The range is, it differs between which bone you're talking about. Some of them only range a couple of weeks difference between breeds, and some of them do have a range of about 4 to 5 months between breeds. But it's not a hard and fast rule that the bigger dogs will take longer.
So it's mainly the breed then, not the size. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's breed and genetics quite often, yeah. So I wouldn't say just because you've got quite a small little dog that you think you can whip off fast at age time. Yeah,
that's really interesting. And we get asked all the time, you know, typically people will have a puppy of, you know, 9-10 months that's super active, and that, you know, they're desperate to get going, desperate to start running and canny crossing, and we're obviously telling them that they really do need to hold off. But you've really explained it really well. I didn't know there was two parts to it, but really interesting.
And I guess the important thing to take away as well is if you're not sure when your dog is fully grown, when it's okay to start canny crossing, we always say consult your vet, and then you can get some advice, because if it is different for different breeds, probably the best thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I'd say if you're not sure about any aspect of your dog's health in regards to canny posture, just ask your vet. There can be all sorts of different things other than the bones that might mean certain breeds or certain individual dogs might not do as well in canny crossing. So if you're concerned about any part of it, you can always just ask your vet and they'd be happy to advise you.
That's really interesting. So in your role and obviously your experience in working in the hospital as well, are there any other considerations that people should factor in for their pets when they're coming to engage in dog sport, whichever area they're going into?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not just once they're won, they're good to go. There's definitely other things you need to think about, just like if you were thinking about it from a human's perspective. Several things kind of very important to think about: the impact and intensity of the exercise you're doing, the weight of your dog, things like diet, temperature, and even the breathing airway system of your dog as well. So going back and having a look at those a little bit more. For example, temperature. At the moment, it's quite cold outside. Currently in Scotland and it is very cold outside. Now, dogs tend to do a little bit better in the cold. They've got their nice furry coats, but you still need to be careful in the cold. Think about the icy conditions on the floor. Think about their paw pads on any ice or snow. And just think about how you breathe when it's cold. It's a little bit harder to breathe. So maybe think about setting off a little bit slower and getting them into the run just like you, rather than setting off at a million miles an hour. They're just like you. The cold will still feel a bit cold to their noses as well. And on the flip side, humidity and heat is a really important one. Now it's a really easy way of checking this. There's some great information out there. You can just Google it, when is it too hot to run with my dog? And there's some fantastic charts you can find telling you the difference with humidity and temperature, because it's really important actually not just to go on the temperature outside, but also the humidity levels. If it's too humid, your dog won't be able to breathe as well. They won't be able to sweat like we do. So dogs don't sweat out of their pores like we do. They've got fur, they sweat by panting, so they're going to dehydrate a lot quicker than we do as well. So always check the ground temperature like you would for a walk. Put your hand on it and think if you're going to run on tarmac or grass if it's summer. That's a really good consideration to take. And also check the temperature and also the humidity. It's really easy on our phones now that all the weather apps tell you the humidity and percentage, so you can check it really easily and decide whether actually it's better to leave your pup at home if you want to go out in the sun that day. So temperature really important. Now we talked a lot about kind of like when to leave your dog at home, but actually when is it good to get your dog out and running? Exercise is fantastic for keeping your dog healthy. It's proven that if you do exercise with your dog, you're going to reduce chances of arthritis for your dog, just like in humans. If you start them off exercising from a young age, not below one, but from when they're kind of young and keep it going all through their lives, they're going to have a much reduced chance of arthritis, just like you and I, because we're getting their joints moving and they're being healthy. They're going to have a greater chance that their weight's going to be under control. Now, weight is going to be the biggest problem for their bones. As much as we've said about growth plates and running them too early, if your dog is overweight, you're actually going to increase the chance more of damaging your dog's bones than if you ran them too early. So keeping their weight in check and exercise is a really good way to do that. And so is diet. So the diet of your dog will really impact how it can run. So it's really good to make sure that your dog has got the right nutritional value for the exercise you're giving it as well. And that's something that is dependent on your dog. It's personal preference for you, it's personal preference for your dog. So I'm not going to go into which food is best for anything, and that's a very personal choice that you can talk to your vet about as well if you're concerned that they're not getting right.
But they're all really important considerations, and I think especially if there's anyone listening to this podcast who's new to canicross, you know, there's some things you probably don't, you take for granted, but when you start exercising your dog in a slightly more extreme way than walking, you have to do, you do really have to think about those things, not just are they old enough, but yeah, the food they're eating and when to feed them, and what you're feeding them, and the temperature. And we've had guests on where we've talked about this, and we've written blogs about it because it's such an important subject, and you can never talk about it too much because we learn each time, and it's good to remind each other, you know, that these things are important. And it's not just when it's hot, is it? Like you said, it's also when it's cold. You have to think about it too. So that's brilliant advice. So thank you, Grace. And something else I know that you have a passion for is working with rescue dogs, isn't it? Anxious and reactive dogs. Tell us a bit more about that, because we always find that fascinating to hear about.
So my two dogs, I love them to bits. They are polar opposites in some aspects of their life. So Tessa, like I said, she is a rescue dog. So she has come, we're still really getting to know her. She's only had her 7 months, and there's still aspects of her personality that are coming out, which are new and a surprise. And I think with rescue dogs, you never know what they've been through. You never know what you're getting. You never know what's going to be a trigger in good or bad for them. And it's part of the joy of rescue dogs. It's such an interesting journey getting to know her, but it can obviously impact where you take her, what you do with her. Really just being aware of what things might trigger your dog is really helpful. Now, rescues tend to get more of the reputation of potentially being anxious and reactive, mostly because they've potentially gone through things that you don't know what they are, and they might have been really negative things which can have an impact on the dog. We actually have a dog who's reactive, and that's the other one, that's Stanley, and we've had him since he was a puppy. And as far as I'm aware, we've tried to remove every negative problem from his life, and he's still a very anxious dog, and that's just his personality. Just a reassurance there that some breeds are just anxious dogs. And you will find it with some breeds more than others. Border collies are typically quite anxious. It's in their DNA. It's part of what makes them such good working dogs and such good learners as well. They really pick up commands very, very fast because their brain's so fast. But because their brain is so fast, they react very quickly, sometimes before thinking. And that's where the reactions can come, when he kind of reacts quickly before assessing the situation, and he quite often is anxious by different things. He sadly also was involved in a car accident, which involved an amputation of his tail, and that took a year for him to fully get over, because he had to go into surgery very quickly, emergency surgery with his tail, and he would not let anyone put anything over his head for a long time because of the cone that the vets gave him. So working him back up to being able to put his harness on and back out for Canicross has been a long journey for him, but we've got there. And he loves it, and it's just a reassurance that if you think your dog cannot put a harness on, he's so reactive he can't do it, they can get there if you've got the right conditioning. And I really recommend the use of behaviourists, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just different dogs and different personalities, and you can work through it together. And I think Canicross can just be such a great outlet for them. You know, if you've got an anxious dog, I don't know about you, if I go for a run and I'm really stressed and I'm really anxious, it's such a good release for me, and it's such a good release for him as well. It just gets all of it's out of his system, and he can relax in the evening because he's totally worked out and got it all out of the system.
We've seen so many benefits with anxious dogs, and as you said, it's not down to specifics. It could be one that you've had from a puppy. It's just in their DNA. But the benefits that Canicross can bring, and the fact that you know you can socialize with other dogs, albeit you're all just safely distanced away, but they're getting proper exercise and just makes an amazing difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's just that community of other dogs, but like you say, in a safe space. It's not just like taking them to the park and letting them all off their lead. Canicross is that excellent example of exercising, but they are all in Canicross harnesses and with their owners, that you can feel safe in that group and discuss that with your other, with your instructor or with your other Canicrossers. And it can be a really good way of socializing them and building them up to getting to know other dogs and people safely.
Definitely. And we actively encourage people who have reactive or anxious dogs to come along to our classes, our dog fit classes, because it is a safe environment, and our dog fit trainers are well versed in that and experienced, and it's really good, I think, for people to hear that it is encouraged and welcomed. And I, for one, I've got a reactive dog, and he always runs superbly when he's amongst the other dogs, and all go in the same direction. We've all got, like you said, something in common, and it's been really good for him. So I certainly, you know, would recommend it to people. So thank you, Grace. There's something I did want to discuss today, because I thought it sounded fascinating when you were telling me about it. And I know you've got something very special lined up that you're doing. And I think our listeners will be very interested in hearing about it. So I believe you're currently in training for a special expedition, aren't you? Do you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, that's right. So, very excited about this. But you might have noticed that I said that I went to Cannock Chase, park running, but now I'm living in Scotland. So two very different places. My husband's in the military, so we do move around a little bit and get posted different places. But in March, I'm the one going away, so that's very exciting, because I'm going to be part of a Forces Wives Challenge expedition. So it's a fantastic group set up by this lady who had such a vision for bringing Forces Wives together to achieve different things. I'll be one of 10 of these ladies going to Norway in March, and we'll be reenacting an expedition which the Heroes of Telemark did across the Norway Hardangervidda Plateau. So we'll be doing over 100 kilometres of skiing at about 3,500 feet above sea level, and dragging and carrying 300 kilos of kit in below freezing temperature. Wow. Which is going to be equally scary, but a fantastic, fantastic opportunity.
So how long do you envisage that will take? All going well.
All going well, yes. all planned, the expedition should take about 5 days. Right. But we'll be out in Norway doing some training beforehand for 5 days as well. So it'd be an amazing trip, yeah.
It does sound amazing, and something that you've had to obviously get fit for as well. Has Canicross played a part in that, in your up and your fitness?
Oh, it absolutely has. Stanley and Tessa are very much part of the team, I feel. So they come out on a lot of my training runs, a lot of the cardio runs that I'm doing. They're very interested when you're doing press-ups. They will stick their heads in underneath you, make it a lot more difficult than it could be. Yes, they're very, very much involved. And the group that I'm going with, I think between the 10 of us, we've got nearly 15 dogs. So we're a very doggy group. And a lot of the dogs have been very much involved in our training. A lot of photos of pulling tyres with our dogs running along behind us. They're very interested in it.
You know what, though? I think it's a great motivation, isn't it? Because I've done a lot of marathons, and even if I end up, my ultimate marathon is a road marathon, or even if it's off road, I'm not going to take my dog. I do some of the training leading up to it. You know, I get up to so many miles with my dog and then do the rest of the training myself. And it's been a real help, you know, to get me out the door and get me focused, knowing that I'm also training with my dog. It's sort of a good distraction as well. And doing it off road, but having a bit of a goal to work towards definitely helps, makes a big difference.
It really does. And I think with running with dogs as well, like you say, it's that dual kind of, it's good for both of you. And it's interesting you said it that way around. I tend to go for my run first and then know that I've got to take the dog out because I'll feel guilty if I don't. So I take the dog second so that I go make sure I do more of the distance. He makes me go out.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Grace. It's like just been really interesting to hear kind of all sides, really. But one thing we always ask our guests before we kind of wrap up is, you know, for somebody that's listening to this, maybe tempted to start, you know, going out, canny crossing with their dog, running with their dog, is there a bit of advice or any last thoughts that you'd like to share with them?
I'd say just do it, just have a go. I know that one of the top frequently asked questions on the DogFit website and everything is, will he pull me over? And no, they won't. It's so much fun. And I think the what you and your dog both get out of it can just be so amazing, like so good. Mental health, physical health for both you and your dog, and that trust that you build with and that bond that you build with your dog when you see them responding to you, like telling them which way to go, you see their face when you're saying that you're going for a run. It's just fab, and you'll get to know some really good people that you wouldn't have got to know otherwise. So I'd say just have a go. Find a local person, see if you can have a go. And you won't look back.
I think you've nailed it up that, really.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, thank you so much, Grace. I've learned so much today talking to you. And I'm super fascinated to hear how you get on with the expedition. So
thank you.
Let us know, won't you? We'll be looking out for updates on social when you're out.
Absolutely. I'll let you know for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And good luck with it all. But yeah, thanks so much. Really lovely to
thank you for having me. Thank you.
Ththank you for listening to this episode of Talk Canny Cross. We really hope that you've enjoyed it. But don't forget to hit subscribe so we can keep you up to date and let you know when the next episode comes out. Happy canny crossing.